Welcome back to Dark Florida. I'm your host, Brooke Moreland, and I've got a busy fall ahead with some incredible events I'd love for you to join me at. From Bigfoot to the paranormal and everything in between, I'll be sharing stories, research, and strange encounters across Florida. Here is where you can catch me speaking live. September 20th, I will be at a Florida Day of High Strangeness in Ocklawaha, Florida, that is being put on by a group I'm affiliated with, Bigfoot World Cryptids and the Paranormal Researchers of Central Florida. It is a free community event, so please come out and join us. Then on October 11th, I will be speaking at the Moonlit Legends Cryptid Expo in Homeland, Florida. And on October 18th, I will be speaking at Charlie's Beyond Belief Expo at the Tropical Lodge number 56 in Fort Myers, Florida. This is an event you won't want to miss. So mark your calendars, come say hi, and let's step into the unknown together. But first, be sure to stay connected with me on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast. Be sure to catch investigations and behind the scenes content on YouTube. Go ahead and subscribe at youtube.com/@darkflorida411. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. And don't forget, you can always share your own story or reach out about being a guest by emailing me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. And wherever you're listening, be sure to drop a 5-star review and share it with your friend. It really helps the show. Now, let's get into tonight's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Dark Florida. Tonight, we're diving into the world of Bigfoot with someone who has dedicated over a decade to chasing the truth behind this mystery. My guest is Mike Familiant, a full-time Bigfoot researcher, producer, and lead investigator behind the popular docuseries In the Shadow of the Big Red Eye. He's also the creator of Squatchables, a series that's designed to help new researchers get started in the field. And from his very first encounter right here in Florida to his expeditions all across the country, Mike has been collecting evidence, sharing his experiences, and giving audiences a real behind-the-scenes look into what it means to be a Bigfoot investigator. Mike, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you here tonight.
Brooke, thank you so much for having me. That was an awesome intro. I appreciate that very much.
Absolutely. So in my digging, I did see that you had your first Bigfoot encounter here in Florida back in 2011.
It all started, so I was working at a beach resort in Sarasota, Florida, and it was the best job that I've ever had. The boss was like, hey, I want you to go lock up at night and watch the sunset on the beach with the guests. I'm like, shit, you don't gotta tell me twice, you know? Anyways, one evening, I guess I was super bored, and Finding Bigfoot was on TV. And at the end of the program, they were like, and first of all, like, I was always, like, growing up an inside kid, right? So, like, put me in front of a screen with a movie or a video game, and I'm set for the day. So, at the end of the program, they were like, hey, if you want to come out with the team, you can look for Bigfoot with us. I said, oh my goodness, there's no way I'm not doing this. This sounds wonderful. So I emailed them, and that evening I purchased 2 tickets. One for me, one for my fiance, whom I did not tell we were going to go look for Bigfoot, right? This was going to be like a little pre-wedding. So anyways, like I said, I was always an inside person. So always, they required, like, you know, all the camping stuff, like the tent and the sleeping bag. They required like this headlamp thing. So I was like, okay, you know, I got to get all this stuff. So in order to preserve this secret, I am hiding all of this stuff. Like, we're living in a one-bedroom apartment, and I'm hiding all this stuff underneath the patio, you know, the Christmas decorations and in the patio. You know, she is never going to find any of this stuff. So anyways, a couple weeks before the exhibition comes up, and I'm getting excited, right? Come home from work one evening. I'm working as an EMT and a firefighter at this point in my life. And I come home from work one evening, and I'm greeted by her at the doorway, and she's got this look on, and she had did something to this day that I have no idea. I still don't know why she decided to do this, but she decided to clean the apartment. and she found all this camping stuff. So she says, Mike, what? She had her hand on the hip, you know, that thing. She said, Mike, what are we doing? I said, hun, we are going to North Florida to look for Bigfoot, right? Then we broke up.
Because of Bigfoot?
That was icing on the cake, straw that broke the camel's back. So, yeah. So, after the breakup, I did not want to go look for Bigfoot anymore. Like, that was not on my top priority list. However, these tickets were very expensive, and I found out that they are non-refundable. Okay, so I was like, okay, cool. I guess I'm going to look for Bigfoot with a broken heart after all. Wonderful. This is going to be a great weekend. So I moved up after the breakup. I moved up to Tampa and I got a job working on the ambulance for the city. And I had three EMT partners and I had picked the weirdest partner. That's how I did it. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any friends or family or anything. So I picked the weirdest person. His name is Jimmy. I said, Jimmy, I gotta go look for Bigfoot, man. Do you want to come with me? And he said, and he's my best friend to this day, he said, man, I've always wanted to do that. So I said, yes. So we go up to Torreya State Park up in the Panhandle. A beautiful place. One of my favorite places, really. And then we get there, and there's like 60 other people looking for Bigfoot there. And I said, my goodness, how are we gonna find Bigfoot with 60 other people? That's ridiculous, you know? So we kind of camped kind of far away from everybody because we thought everybody was just going to be weird, you know? So, and it was cool. It was a bunch of people watching, a lot of people watching, hiking through the woods. We were talking to Bigfoot witnesses that have actually seen Bigfoot and researchers that this is their occupation to go look for Bigfoot. Well, I was like, man, this is the coolest thing ever. Nothing happened though. Like we went on night hikes and we tried calling doing these insanely crazy vocalizations through the woods to try to elicit a response from a creature that at this point in my life, I thought probably didn't exist. Whatever. It's the last night, Jimmy and I, we are camping, we are kind of camping away from everybody again because everybody was a little bit weird. And it's the last night of the expedition and about 2 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden you hear, bam, a tree knock come from one side of camp. And I immediately thought that it was the people that put on the expedition. You know, like somebody like hoaxing us, trying to pretend that Bigfoot's out there. And I didn't think twice about it. I was like, okay, cool. You know, until about 2 seconds later, bam, a tree knock from the complete opposite direction. So I said, man, these guys got to be pretty good. So anyways, about 15 minutes goes by and all of a sudden, you hear crashing, come crashing down through the forest, plunk, a fist-sized rock. Now, it's at this point in my life where I said, absolutely nope, this is how horror movies start, you know, I am getting out of here. And Jimmy, the person I was with, he's like, well, if you want to sleep in the car, you're more than welcome to sleep in. By the time he had said that, I had my sleeping bag, and I was, I mean, just beelining it right to the car. So anyways, he comes up. He's like, Mike, this is a Bigfoot research expedition. Bigfoot knock on trees, and they throw rocks. Like, this is the whole point of, like, why we're here. It's like, yeah, I suppose you're right, you know? So I went back out by the campfire. Over the course of the next 15 minutes, four more of these fist-sized rocks come crashing down, land 5 to 10 feet away from us. So after that, we're both kind of like not feeling too well about this whole scenario. Jimmy comes up to me. I guess he's not thinking too right. He comes up to me. He says, Mike, I got an idea. I'm going to throw a rock back at it. I said, Jimmy, man, I don't think that's a good idea. But he does. He takes the rock, he chucks it, and about 2 seconds later, this is the moment that changed my life forever. A 15-pound laptop-sized boulder came crashing through the woods and landed literally 5 feet away from us. So that was it. That was our experience. It was pretty life-changing.
That's an incredible first experience. How do you guys get to investigate together?
So get this. I devoted my life after this to Bigfoot and trying to investigate Bigfoot and doing that. He devoted his life to bushcraft and survivalist stuff. He was never an outside person either. He now runs, I don't know if anybody's familiar with Florida Bushcraft, but he's the founder of that group. So go check him out. And we were both like so inside kids. That's the thing that's like so impressive. Like if it wasn't for this one trip and 15 minutes of these rocks being thrown, changed the direction of both of our lives forever. It's crazy. All because of Bigfoot. It's insane.
Since you had that encounter that really sparked it all, have you since gone back to that area to do any investigating?
I've been back there, I believe, three times. At least twice. The first time I went back, I met with a park volunteer, and I like to meet with park volunteers and really pick their brains about things, mostly because if you schmooze talk them enough, they'll let you use their golf cart. So I was trying to get on the golf cart that trip, but we were just driving around. He was driving me around, showing me all the areas that he likes to go to and stuff. And he's like, you know, I saw a Bigfoot right there one time. I'm like, wait, stop the cart. Hold on a second. You know, and then we did a whole recreation. We saw that the creature was like 8 foot tall, and it was really cool. It's all on a YouTube channel if anybody's interested in checking out that recreation. YouTube called In the Shadow of Big Red Eye.
I've been to the Panhandle a couple times myself, and I'm actually going back for an expedition next year in March. And every time I've gone, I've had strange things happen from the first time I had the encounter to I went back for another expedition. And it's just an area of high strangeness, in my opinion. You know, there's just something going on in the Panhandle.
It's true. It's very true. And I know, it's true. I was in Blackwater River area too. That's a really cool area. Go out a little more west of Torreya. That's a super cool area. When I come down in January, I'm going to be down in Central Florida and South Central Florida. So unfortunately, I won't be hitting up the Panhandle this coming trip, but I'm excited to come down nonetheless. I'm sure we'll talk about that here in a little bit.
You mentioned that you were an EMT in this kind of before you became this full-time Bigfoot researcher. So you go on this expedition, you have this experience, and that's kind of the moment that changed you. Was it in that moment that you're like, I need to know what is going on here, and you just decided to dive headfirst into this? Or what pushed you to kind of take that next step, to take it more seriously?
So we left that expedition, and Jimmy and I were talking on the way home, and we're like, man, something's going on here. You know, there's something to this, and we're going to figure it out. That was our goal. You know, we're going to figure out what's capable of throwing these rocks at us. So we started talking to all the researchers and witnesses and looking at the hotspots and watching all the shows on TV. Those are the good things. And in about a 3-week time frame, we decided that we are now professionals. So we decided that we're going to go out by ourselves. So we go a little closer to home. We go to Colt Creek State Park. Now let me just like side note here about Colt Creek for a second, because like I travel like the country full time camping at state parks and national forests and stuff like this. And I see a lot of amazing things. I will go back to Colt Creek tomorrow if I give it the opportunity. It's my favorite place on the planet that I've been to. For those of you that have not been there, it's just go check it out. Take a hike there. It's really, really just a beautiful, spectacular place. One of my favorites, but super squatchy. We get there too, and we're there for one night. It's one night only. Jimmy and I, and Jimmy didn't really want to. However, I decided that we are going to go for a night hike. So Jimmy was a little nervous. He was not anymore, because he brought his 6 foot tall machete and his 10 million lumen spotlight that he's got, you know. So anyways, we're about a mile and a half from camp. Jimmy's spotlight, he's shining around, and all of a sudden it comes across two pairs of reflecting eyes. One pair, fire engine red, right? The other pair right next to it is aqua blue. I was like, man, that's weird. We both initially thought, because we were so new at this whole outdoor thing, we thought it was people. We didn't realize people don't have eye shine, you know? So we started yelling at the thing, hey, we're just looking for Bigfoot, you know? And then we thought they were poachers, illegally poaching animals. And we're like, oh, this is not a good scenario. So anyways, we ended up, the one set of eyes was just staring back at us. It turned, looked at the blue set, turned and looked back at us, and then blinked. And that was another nope moment in our lives, right? We were out of there. Jimmy put a notch in the tree with his machete. So when we went back the next day, we did a recreation. We could see that the eyes were about like 7.5 feet tall and about 2 feet apart from each other. So that was kind of cool. That was our second experience. And my rolling theory is that unless that was two owls of different species sitting on a branch that didn't exist, I think we might have saw two Sasquatch eyeshine that night, which is really cool. That was it though, but that was done. You know, that was the moment that I knew that we got to figure this thing out. That's cool.
So when you say eyeshine, were they self-illuminating with the colors red and blue, or it was only when having the lumen flashlight on it did you guys see the colors?
Correct. Yeah, when we when we took the light away from it, it was not visible at all whatsoever. When we shined the light back at it, then we could see the eyeshine.
Were you guys able to make out any other distinguishable features?
Nothing. It was just far enough away that you couldn't, you know, the light was super bright, but the thing was just far enough away. It always happens that way. We were so new at that point that we when we did the recreation, we went back to try to, you know, do the pictures and the what we saw them do on TV, obviously. And when we went back to the same area, we noticed that, first of all, there was a little dip in the ground. So I think what the Bigfoot did was just like crouch down because the eyes just kind of, for lack of better words, disappeared without any audio of Bigfoot running away or anything like that, or the creature running away. So I think it just dipped down and put its head down. And when we went back that the next day, we were looking in the sand. There's a lot of sand down there. And we found like a big size handprint, but we were so new to the thing. We weren't looking for big hands. We were looking for big feet. So
what are some of the most compelling pieces of evidence that you've personally encountered that has just further convinced you that Bigfoot is real?
Okay. Well, yeah, I think Bigfoot related, one of the coolest things, and this comes from New Jersey. We got like a vocalization that there were five of us on the expedition, all voice recorders going. I did a barred owl call, and we got back one of the best Bigfoot vocalizations anybody that our team has heard. And it's on the YouTube channel, Best Bigfoot Vocalization, it's called. What was impressive about that one is we sent that off to a linguist from the military. First of all, I am not a professional by any means, or a scientist or anything by any means in any field. So when I get evidence, I send that away to people that are. So I sent this voice clip or this audio clip away, and he came back with this X, Y, and this report that says is of X, Y, and Z, it's outside of human vocal range, and it's no known animal from northwestern New Jersey. And that's cool because this dude's a scientist in the military. Like, that's pretty powerful, you know, which is awesome. We've also found a footprint up in high, or a trackway up in High Point State Park, which is really cool in the snow. That was back in 2015. We found that. You could find pictures of that on my Facebook page and stuff like that.
That's incredible. Now, I think we're all, if you're in the Bigfoot world, familiar with the Sierra sounds, and I've heard some other vocalizations. I admit, I have not heard yours yet. I have read it down. I'm definitely going to go and listen to it. How could you describe it to me and the listeners? Because I think sometimes you get the whoops, then you have that little samurai chatter, like was kind of captured with Ron Moorhead sounds. What kind of sounds did you guys capture?
This was three long sustained howls. And it was like, three times. And on the third time, I stepped on top of it and I said, that's not a coyote. And then after, because why not? You know, just because. And then you could hear the coyotes in the background just start going crazy. So you could tell the obvious difference between the vocalizer and the known animal, which is really cool.
What type of equipment were you using to capture that?
Digital voice recorder. And it's cool because it was captured by five different voice recorders. We all had five going at one time, which is really cool. We actually split into two groups at that point. So we were able to triangulate, and we could actually kind of figure out how far, doing decibel readings and triangulation, how far away this creature or the vocalizer was, which is really neat. Yeah.
How far was it?
It was like 300 yards, easy. And that's on a good day. So it was just because of the terrain. We were on this gas line, which is really active for Bigfoot reports and Bigfoot sightings. So it's just I don't know, something that makes you go, you know? I'm in the woods so much, it would be impossible for me to be able to record everything. And people are going to be like, well, that's not the best way of doing evidence and research. And I totally agree with that. But I spent 139 nights tent camping last year alone. Yeah. So I'm on track to do 150 this year. So there's no way I can record like my nightly snoring sessions and hopefully that there's a Bigfoot in there. It just doesn't make sense.
So you said you do a lot of tent camping. That's awesome. Do you like mainly stick to the East Coast, or are you all over the country?
East Coast, Maine to Florida. I made it out to, I was in Illinois this year, which is fun. Next year, be in Michigan, the Upper Peninsula. So that'll be fun. But yeah, mostly East Coast, east of the Mississippi for the most part. I think next year we're going to keep it on the DL right now, but there's a big good possibility that I might be able to get out to the Pacific Northwest for a week. So we're going to have fingers crossed on that one.
The UP is another great area. My research partner, Marion, has had some experiences up in the UP that have been really interesting and kind of changed her perspective on things when it comes to Bigfoot and maybe what they're capable of and what we know about them, especially when it came to, that's why I asked about the eyes. What she experienced up in the UP is she actually had like the self-illumination back. And she had seen that and witnessed this with a couple other people. So that sounds like it'll be a fun thing to look forward to for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of my favorite things to do is just explore. And it's not, you know, I don't know. Everybody has their own reasoning behind looking for Bigfoot. For me, it's not about the finding. It's about the journey that matters. It's about the people that you meet along the way and the places that you visit and just the connections that you make. And I think that's super important. And I know some people, you know, aren't in it for that. And they're just very into finding Bigfoot. I get it. But to me, I'm in it to just enjoy and enjoy life. That's you only get one go around this. So you might as well just make it fun and entertaining and have a good time, right?
Absolutely. And what better way to do that than to hunt Bigfoot with some good people?
Look for Bigfoot, right? I mean, come on. That's just crazy.
So on this show, we explore the idea of Bigfoot and the supernatural and the paranormal. Have you had any experiences while you're out that blur those lines?
No, except one time. And let me, before I tell you the story, I would like to say that I believe that Bigfoot, and this is just because the evidence that I have found along my journey thus far would point me to the direction that Bigfoot's a biological creature. Now, and I get, you know, and some people may roll their eyes. I understand, you know, I get it. But I'm open to the possibility of Bigfoot having other capabilities, right? I've just never seen it. So I personally, it's hard for me to answer an unknown with another unknown. But going back to where I was going with that is there is that story I just told about the Bigfoot vocalization that we heard. There is no way that all five of us in that group did not see a UFO right before that. Zigzagging across the sky, back and forth, a red light, no question about it. We all were not smoking or drinking or anything like that. We were all sober, all of us, I mean, and it was 15 minutes prior to the Bigfoot vocalization. And to me, and this may sound a little bit crazy, it's not close enough for me to relate the two as Bigfoot and UFOs together. If it was 30 seconds, okay, we'll talk. Then we'll talk. 15 minutes is like, I know there's UFOs out there. There's got to be, 100%. And I know there's Bigfoot out there. I'm pretty positive there's Bigfoot out there. I've never seen one, so I can't say that they do exist. So to have two in the same area, I mean, it's probably pretty rare, but not impossible, I suppose.
What comes first, the chicken or the egg? Was it the UFO or was it Bigfoot or both? And I'm open-minded to those possibilities as well. I think that in some of these areas where Bigfoot is spotted, it's interesting that it seems like it holds hands with high strangeness. That was pretty cool. Did you guys capture any of that on camera?
Yeah, we did. It's not in the clip of the sound. You have to go look in the actual episode of what it was, and it's linked in that clip, so you'll be able to find it.
Where do you think is the new Bigfoot hotspot for Bigfoot activity as of lately?
Man, very underrated Red River Gorge in Kentucky. That's I do a lot of I pass through there a lot, and I always like to poke my head in and do some research when I'm in there. I know the first time I was ever there, I was solo camping. I was sleeping in my car just because it was a one-nighter, overnighter. And I got out of my car, shut the door, you know, and that kind of sounds like a tree knock. And I got a tree knock back. No question about it. It was not a, you know, it was a power knock. It wasn't an echo. So I was like, oh, maybe I picked a good spot. But yeah, Red River Gorge, also a hot spot that kind of has lost its hotness. So I guess it's a cool spot, if you will. Whitehall, New York is just, I mean, every time I go up to Whitehall, I get some sort of Bigfoot activity. There's no, hands down, no question about it. They also have a really, really cool Bigfoot festival every September up there. So that's something to check out too.
So you've mentioned it a couple of times that you do have this docuseries. Could you tell us just a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so back in 2016, I was watching all these shows. I was really into Bigfoot. I was watching all these shows. I believe I was even an investigator with the BFRO at that point. And I was like, huh, I'm really tired. Like, all these shows on TV, like, they're cool, but they don't portray the way Bigfooting's actually done. You're aware of that. I think, you know, your fans are probably, your listeners are probably aware of that. But, you know, not to burst anybody's bubble, but they're kind of related for, you know, made for money and for ratings and stuff like that. So I decided I was going to make a show that was not and depicted the what Bigfooting was actually about. So I started the series called In the Shadow of Big Red Eye, which is we're currently filming our ninth season. We've been doing it since 2016, so 9 years, which is crazy. We're the longest running and only weekly Bigfoot show anywhere ever. And it's all found on YouTube. There's a new episode every Monday night, so check that out. I know this is not going to air. You could probably edit this out, but we do have an episode tonight coming out in like 30 minutes from the Everglades. So we were down there last year. You'll have to check that out as well.
So you were saying that what you see in the shows isn't what it's really like for real Bigfoot research. What do you think are some techniques and methods and maybe even like mindsets that you bring into your research that sets you apart from the rest?
Yeah, so exactly. For me, it's not about the finding. It's about the looking and the journey. It's about the adventure, getting to the destination. And so that's what my show focuses on. It's not your show where we're, you know, we find evidence every time we go out. We don't find footprints. And if we do find like an unusual vocals or recording vocalization, I don't play music over it. Like, that's crazy to me. But it's, my show is, first of all, I'm the only person that's involved with it besides my manager, who helps me with the, you know, logistical side of things. I film everything, I edit everything, I produce everything. That's your small town feel. That's exactly what it's like, you know, it's that small, like you said, independent series. But the other cool thing is like it's filmed. I could pay a film crew to come and film me and have the boom microphones and have, you know, the whole 8-person production crew rolling behind me. I could do that, but then that's not what it's all about. I like the amateur film style because it entices people to make their own series. I've gotten up to this point, I just received another one the other day, 3 friends have decided to make their own Big Red Eye series. And they're you know, kids 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and they're going out and they're knocking on trees and they're filming everything and they're having the time of their lives. It's all because of my series. I think that's the coolest thing. That's why I do the show. It's not about the evidence and the finding. It's about, like I said, it's about inspiration and the journey to get there.
I think that there's a lot to be said about the journey, because Bigfooting is not for the faint of heart. It's actually, it's pretty tough. And you've been down here in Florida, you used to live here. You know how it can be out in the swamps. It is not a walk in the park. I mean, when you Bigfoot, I would be safe to say you probably go off the beaten path and you probably get deep in there. And there are some times where it is challenging, but it's all worth it in the end, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. You guys got some, let me tell you, the mosquitoes in Florida are a different breed of mosquitoes.
Well, they are the state bird of Florida, and Bill Gates released like a bunch of engineered mosquitoes not that long ago. So you're correct. They are a different breed down here. They're not even real.
Yeah, wonderful. That's.
Yeah, you didn't see that?
No, I didn't hear about that. I have to look that up.
Basically, and it's the creepiest video. It's awful. It's like a swamp scene, and it all these mosquitoes create like the Grim Reaper. They create a silhouette of it, and it is to promote Bill Gates. What is the word? Hybrid mosquito that's supposed to eat real mosquitoes, so that way it doesn't spread diseases like West Nile or all of those other mosquito-related illnesses. And so they released, I forget how many million or thousands down in the Everglades. And it's like the creepiest video ever. Yeah, I'm not a fan of it. But is there any things coming up, or what is in store for your doc series? Any new projects or expeditions?
Yeah, well, the show has some cool stuff coming up. We have it's not new, but it's a cool little side docu-series called Squatchables. It's if you've never gotten into, if you're trying to get into Bigfoot and you don't want to pay the ridiculous amount of money that it costs to go out on one of these Bigfoot expeditions, all you got to do is watch my docuseries called Squatchables. Didn't steal the name from Lunchables, okay? Me for that one. But it's an 11-part series about how to look for Bigfoot if you've never done it before. Even if you've never been in the woods, I tell you how to go hiking and what to bring and stuff like that. All the way up into really in-depth stuff like how to, you know, evidence collection and track casting and stuff.
It's awesome.
New series. I've not told anybody about this yet, but if anybody has a Bigfoot themed business, let me know, because we have a new series coming out that's called Bigfoot Big Business, where I interview Bigfoot entrepreneurs about their Bigfoot themed business. To get a little tourism going for the area, that way, you know, hopefully boost their local economy. That's, you know, what another point of the show In the Shadow of Big Red Eye is, I hope people will go to areas that I go to and do the things that I do and spend money at these local establishments. And because inherently where I go and where Bigfoot's seen is not the highest socioeconomic class. It's not the biggest money system rolling through there. So if we can boost this local tourism and get some people in there, perfect example, Sutton, West Virginia, they built a Bigfoot museum there that changed the whole town. Now the town's semi-thriving, which it was not, you know, and it's Bigfoot big business, you know?
Absolutely. And especially as we talked about, you know, with some of your research being more focused on the East Coast, we'd be amiss not to mention the hurricanes that came through last year in 2024. Hurricane Helene desolated Eastern Tennessee and that Western North Carolina area, among other places here in Florida and in between, got hit really hard. And these towns are trying to rebuild and come back. I just saw something that they're really looking for people to come and visit some of these remote areas and, you know, spend their tourism dollars there and support those small businesses, because like we just were talking about Bill Gates, Amazon and Walmart and all of these big corporations are kind of coming in and taking over. And, you know, it's important to support the small local businesses and the mom and pop shops, because those are the people who have been there. And I think that's awesome to want to support the areas. That's fantastic.
Definitely important.
Now, if you were to stumble upon Bigfoot tomorrow and you could just ask one question, what would it be?
That's a good question. I've been doing this a long time. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that question before. So congratulations.
Thank you.
What would I ask Bigfoot given the opportunity if I had one?
Yeah, maybe if there was some sort of physical attribute you wondered about, habitat, intention, anything's on the table.
I would probably want to know like why, because obviously we think Bigfoot is a little more intelligent than your average run-of-the-mill animal. So I would probably ask Bigfoot, why remain hidden from humans and elusive from humans for so long? Like, what's the point of that? Like, is it because as humans we like to just harm things and like to kill off things? That's a really good thing that we do as people. And I don't like us. So, I mean, I would like to remain far away from us if I'd given the opportunity as well. Or is it something completely different? Is it just maybe they're like allergic to us or something? You know, you never know.
I think that's really interesting, because just speculating on theories and stuff, you look at some of the Native American lore, and they said that there was a time at one point where they supposedly looked at them as like a dispersed tribe, and they did even some trading with them, and they had like trade deals and things. So like, to your point, what was the moment that shifted that course in history to where they maybe at one point in time walked among us, so to speak, to kind of living in the shadows. What was it?
That's a great, great segue to my theory is, I think, like you said, pre-colonization, Native American tribes were cool with Bigfoot. You know, there were no issues with them. They get along, protectors of the forest, all that good stuff. Then when the white person came over from England or from, you know, Europe, and what did we bring with us? Guns. And what did we start doing? We shot everything that we could possibly get our hands on to eat, right? We killed a lot of things. And I think Bigfoot, again, intelligent creature, saw this from afar. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. There's not a lot of us in. They're taking a lot of things away. We got to get out of here. And I think ever since then, there's just been this inherent fear of Bigfoots from humans.
Yeah. And the deforestation as well, coming into their homes.
We're not good neighbors.
No, we're not. We're certainly not. And that's why I think it's interesting too, when you hear a lot of the stories from that time, the 1800s and things too, even some more recent ones from, I mean, the boom in the last 50 years in the United States, and looking at the habitat that we have lost, it's actually kind of depressing. But it's interesting hearing from some of the loggers and people who work out in those forests where they are putting up houses or businesses, that all of a sudden they start having these aggressive Sasquatch encounters, probably trying to scare them out. And I mean, right. I can't say that I wouldn't do the same if I was in that position. I know we've talked about your channel, where people can find you and follow along with your work. Do you have any upcoming presentations? Yes.
So what's super cool is we're finishing out this year with presentations mostly in New Jersey. But I did just announce not long ago, this year I'm doing the Do You Believe Tour, Mike Familon, Do You Believe Tour 2025. Just announced next year I'm doing the whole thing over again. We're doing it again, part of the Beyond the Footprints Tour, Mike Familon, Beyond the Footprints 2026. And we already have a fun little fact for y'all, is we already have presentations lined up for next year, and they're right down in Florida in January. I cannot wait. Let me get my calendar out so I can tell everybody where I'm going to be, because it's right around the corner. I was just looking at that this morning. It's coming up.
It is. We're only a few months away.
January 24th, Okeechobee County Library at 3:00. So don't miss that. It'll be my second time giving a presentation there. So I'm so stoked that they invited me back. Let's see. January 27th will be at the Volusia County Library in DeLand at 1:00. And then we're closing out the trip in Hastings at the St. John's County Library at 6:00 on January 30th. So that's all going to be part of the brand new Beyond the Footprints tour. If you want to see me mess up big time, because this is a whole brand new presentation, be sure to check one of them out, because there's a 100% chance of that happening. But yeah, you can find me, not hard to find. I'm everywhere. If you come out to Bigfoot festivals, look for me. I love to do the MC work. I do a lot of that. The conferences I love to speak at. You can go to my website at shadowofredeye.com, and that will, you could find all of my upcoming appearances. I'm also looking for some help for the show. If anybody's interested in giving me a hand, you can find my contact information on the website, Facebook, Instagram, and so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll shoot you some information on Facebook or something like that, and we'll figure that one out. I'm sure there's going to be a legitimate, just because Florida is so awesome, I know a lot of people down there. So it's going to be a little like party get together. So I'm super excited.
Thank you so much for coming on and hanging out with me tonight. I will be sure to drop all of your links in the show notes. So everybody, please look there to find direct links to his YouTube channel and website. And thank you again so much for coming on.
You're more than welcome. Thanks for having me. And hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening to Dark Florida. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow the show so you don't miss what's coming next. Stay connected with me on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast, catch investigations and everything happening behind the scenes on YouTube at youtube.com/@darkflorida411. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. And don't forget, you can always share your own story or reach out about being a guest by emailing me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, keep your eyes open, your lanterns lit, and remember, Florida is darker than you think. Stay curious and stay strange.